Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Okay, everybody, we are starting a little late tonight due to some technical difficulties with the live feed a little earlier. So I want to thank all of you that are joining us back here again. Merry Christmas in advance. I want to thank every one of you who decided that I'm worthy enough to be part of your holiday gatherings, I guess. So thank you for that. To my kids, Mommy loves you. Merry Christmas. To Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio in New York City, currently with isolradio.com. You can hear Barry do his musical magic on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, it's the CEO of Track One Entertainment. He is gracing New York with the best of R&B events all over the best of R&B venues. And busy as a bee, as I said before, this man is out there giving aspiring singers a chance to get their feet wet with some professional studio time as the winner of his upcoming 2014 version of So You Think You Can Sing competition. Those of you that are interested in becoming singers in the industry, email him at track1entertain@gmail.com. Also, for those of you that want a quick registration, as of December 30th, that will be the first official day for online registration. So contact Barry Mason on Facebook, and you can give him your name and phone number if you want to be a contestant. Of course, I have to thank my team. Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, you know, she's feeling a little better. We'll be back soon. DJ Domewrecker Rodney Williams, he's experienced 4 deaths in his family, including one that just took place this evening. So I want to send out our condolences to him and let him know that we miss him very much and understand the holidays are a little messy for him right now. And I want to thank Monster Miles. And, of course, those of you that know this man know that he is absolutely, while mentioned last, he's definitely not least. And without him, this panel really, you know, would be lacking. So Deacons Eddie Williams out there in Toledo, Ohio, thank you very much for all that you do on and off the air. And if you're listening, once again, you know, I can't say thank you enough to the Real World Black News and Discussion Group and also to Linda Miller's Black Love and Conversations Group. You guys have been fabulous, I'm going to say, with support on and off the air. Also tonight, everybody, I have an additional thank you to say. Officially, as of 3 hours ago, I want to thank Hakeem Bey because he is part of the Black Love and Conversations Group, and he officially is our first weekly single segment sponsor as of this week, and I am trying to pull up the information. He is the author of a book, and the book is available for sale as an ebook for $1 until, I believe, it's December 31st, but don't quote me just yet. I'm waiting for my technology here to work with us. Okay. I will get it together before the end of the show. So, you know, Hakeem, you are sponsoring this week's segment. I thank you very much for all that you have been doing to support. I will get it together. Just bear with me. So now, in the spirit of Christmas, everyone, going out with Donny Hathaway's This Christmas, when we get back, we will get tonight's part two of last night, which is Truth or Stereotype, the African Americans America. And tonight we have a special guest. He is Ishmael Fitzgerald of the New Millennium Leaders out in Pennsylvania. This man is doing some awesome things for the community. One of the reasons why I asked him to come along is because we spoke yesterday about part of why the stereotypes against us is sometimes self-inflicted because of the things that we do that outsiders see. And part of what's going on with him is that as much as he's doing, he's looking for volunteers and really is not getting as much as he could use. So tonight, I'm going to give him the chance to pitch what he's doing and also ask for people who are out in his area or who can travel to his area to give him a hand, because I saw a video of what this man is doing for the needy out there in his place, and I'm touched by it. All of you that know my story know that I've been one of those people that have benefited from the type of programs that he's putting out there. So when we get back, we will be definitely hearing from him. So here is Donny Hathaway with This Christmas. After a word from our sponsor, we will be back. Hang out with me and keep it locked right here.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com on The Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Okay, we're back, everybody. Welcome back to the On the Edge show with Katie Burnett and friends. All right. Wow, my panel is lit up. Okay. Let me just say, before I bring in our panelists for the evening, that we are definitely trying to reach out and bring awareness to our community. Our people need to get it together because we are one hell of a resourceful group of people. We are definitely a group of people that can make things happen. And the problem is that we put our unification into some things that are not always progressive to us. And when other people see it, they capitalize on it, and we don't get what's rightfully ours based on the things that we do. Part of the things that happens here is that we tend to culturalize some things that are not always the best for us. We look bad, the worst of us is showcased, and this is the thing that we would like to have happen in reverse. We would like to, for people to know us, for the best that's in us, for the things that we can do. So I'm going to bring in our panelists one at a time and get their thoughts on the situation. So I would like for all of you to bear with me as I do that. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Yes, a very blessed and spirit-filled holiday greetings to the panel and also all the listeners, over 1,000 listeners. Greetings to your families and much more, even to your friends.
Thank you, sir. Hang on 1 minute. You will be first in the panel. 1 minute. Welcome to the show, Carly. You're on the air.
Good evening. This is Professor Carlton Jones.
Hey, hi, Professor. Okay, I'm
going to be Professor, how you doing? God bless you and your family.
Same here, good brother. Same here.
1 second. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening. This is Ishmael Fitzgerald.
Hi, Ishmael. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our guest speaker for the night. Just give me 1 second as I bring in the other two panelists, and we will get the discussion started.
Blessings to you, brother Ishmael.
Same to you.
Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Yes, how are you?
Hi, who am I speaking with?
Oh, this is Hakeem.
Hi, Hakeem. Good. You can help me correct whatever I said wrong, okay? Hold on a minute.
All right. Blessings to you, Hakeem.
Thank you, man.
Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Rod, how are you?
Hey, okay. Rod, all right.
Hey, what's
all
happening?
Right. We're ready to get the show going
hey,
now.
The game's all here, okay.
All right, blessings to you, Rod.
Ishmael, give me 1 minute. I want to say thank you to our sponsor who's on the line this evening, and that is Hakeem Bey, and I appreciate you, brother, more than you know. Right in time for the holidays, you have become our first official weekly sponsor, and your book is... Say it for me.
Oh, no problem. This is a book my wife wrote. It's called The Rites of Passage Meal Treasury Cook Collection. And the e-book is available on Facebook for just $1 throughout the holidays.
All right, where can they purchase it?
They can purchase it at Morris Writes at www.morriswrites.com or calling toll-free 1-877-570-3108.
Okay, and I believe you were speaking earlier. You said something about a Facebook page. Is that correct?
Yes, the Rites of Passage Meal Treasury Cookbook. It has a page on Facebook, and you can purchase it through the shop button on there.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. And once again, thank you for being, you know, one of the people to break the cycle of, you know, the stereotype that we don't support each other. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity and the platform. Thank you.
Very welcome. Very welcome. It's my pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, Ishmael Fitzgerald is on the line right now. Now, Ishmael, I have to tell you, and Professor Hawthorne Jones was the liaison referral, so I appreciate what you've done also, Professor. But what I saw in that video touched me so much that I was compelled to ask you to come along immediately. You have put forth so much stuff, and the fact is that one of the things you said in the video was you're not getting enough people to help you, you know, make the community program pretty much go out as smoothly, I guess, as it could. So would you please tell my panel and my listeners what it is you do, what's the name of your program, and what it is that you can use to make this go a little better?
All right, thank you. First of all, I want to say I'm humbled and honored, you know, for the opportunity to speak on your show. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Very welcome.
Appreciate it. The group is the New Millennium Leaders. It's a group of brothers that I met through Facebook. You know, it's basically we used to indulge in barbershop talk, a lot of talk about sports and things of that nature. And then once we started getting into important or serious topics, you know, we started brainstorming on thinking of ideas that we could be a fixture in the community. So, last year, 2012, we did our first book bag drive in North Philadelphia. Had a great turnout. Probably gave over 500 book bags or more with school supplies. And this year, we did another book bag drive in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, and it basically had the same successful turnout. So this past Saturday, we did a clothes and cabinet drive, and that was basically organized by myself and a couple of other brothers that's in the organization. It came from me donating clothes probably 2 months ago at one of the local shelters in the city that I'm from, and just seeing the reaction from some of the families that received some of my clothing. You know, I went back to the group and I asked the group about possibly doing a drive similar to going to a thrift shop and shopping at a thrift shop, but instead we donate all the clothes that go to our friends and family to solicit clothes and toys. Really not toys, but it was clothes and food, and we also got toys. So we was able to get a building, local YMCA in Chester, YWCA in Chester, and we went from there. It was a beautiful event, beautiful event.
Wow. I saw the documentary, and, you know, I have absolutely no shame in my game when I speak about the fact that your type of program was something that my family had to, at one time, and even now at some point, benefited from. You know, we were in a shelter as well. We had lost everything. There were so many things that, you know, that emotionally comes with that type of an uprooting. And when we got there, you know, coming close to Christmas, usually I have this tradition, whether or not we have, you know, presents or a tree, we always have lights in my house and we always have a little something that, you know, we can do as a family. And when you were in the shelter, first of all, you had to get used to you being in somebody else's property to call home. Then you have to worry about the fact that all these stupid mandatory things they make you do, which further lets you know you're in the situation. There were people that came to the streets when we were waiting outside, you know, to get registered with the main headquarters and stuff, bringing food, bringing clothes, making sure the children each went home with a toy or something like that. And it's something that, you know, if you're not a person who understands how to embrace that type of hand up, it's not a handout, ladies and gentlemen, it's a hand up when you're in a temporary situation. you know, you that part meant so much. And when you saw all these people that were just looking at you as people and not dirty little shelter people and things to that effect, you, you know, you get a feeling of validated. So when I was watching how many of those people were out there and they were not African-American, they were of other, you know, races and stuff, it bothered me because I said, there are so many of us. We are in such numbers that we could do this. For our own people, we could do this. And
right.
What I hear is people complaining, oh, I ain't doing that. I ain't walking around giving this. You know, and that's what outside cultures tend to use as a way to, you know, be our, the backdoor hook and pull us out from under our own self. So tell us now, what is it that you're facing? What are the struggles in this program?
Well, the main, now I won't say the main thing. I'll give you an example. When we were trying to find a venue to hold the event, I had sent out flyers and contacted local shelters in the city to try to find out if I could possibly hold them there. So one of the shelters that I speak of, I spoke to the lady on the phone, and this is a sister as well. I spoke to her on the phone. She told me to email her and fax her the flyer. So Saturday morning, when I went down there to, I went back again out there just to speak to some of the residents, and I asked one of the gentlemen who lived, who was basically staying in the shelter, had he heard about the cabinet drive that was going to be going on in a couple hours? And he said, no, not at all. They don't tell us anything. They won't. And I'm thinking to myself, like, these people are in charge of basically getting these people back on their feet, and you have an opportunity to get these people clothing and food and toys for their children, and you don't even tell them. So I went inside to the office and asked the lady, you know, she claimed she wasn't the lady I spoke to, and I don't think she was, honestly. I gave her another flyer, and I asked her, cause, you know, this event is about to go on in 2 hours. Can you please, you know, get the word out to the people in the shelter? So she kind of just took the flyer, and I stood in the waiting room speaking to someone else, and she saw me standing there because I was telling another lady what was going on. So she finally got up and walked inside. So it was like you have to go just the extra mile to get people who are allegedly in place to help people to help people,
right.
Which makes right. It makes no sense. And so then when I went out, I went back outside the gate, and it was a brother out there, and I talked to the brother, the same brother I talked to initially. I said, man, listen, we have an event going on down the street. It's two blocks away. You know, and I seen what he had on his feet. He had some, you know, some worn down shoes or boots on. I'm like, brother, we got some boots, we got socks, we got jeans. I mean, we got some quality stuff down there that you need to come down there and get. So, you know, he made a joke like, you think you got stuff for a big brother like me? And I, you know, I laughed it off. I'm like, man, we got stuff for everybody. So he asked, could he help us set up? So he came to the venue and he stayed the whole entire time we was there, and at the end of the day, he shook my hand and he told me, he said, you changed my life today. You know, he said, you changed my life today. He said, me and my family lost everything, and the y'all brothers changed everything for me. And he is one of the brothers that was in the shelter. He was one of the brothers that was going to miss out on this event based on people that's in place that could have helped prevent that. And that's what's going on. Like, we put the message out. I want to stop saying, we brothers from the new millennium, we put the word out through Facebook. And the response is, like, if I put a picture of myself at working out at the gym or just some foolish picture on there, I might get comments and about 100 likes. But if I put a picture on there about donating a donation drive for our people, you might get one like, nobody's going to speak on it. And you know they see it.
Yeah.
You know they see it.
Yeah.
So, like,
yes, they do. Yes,
that is very sad.
It's very sad, man, because it's like it's a zombie state. It's a zombie state when it comes to us. Like, if it ain't twerking or some fighting or some foolishness about some reality shows, we just in a zombie state, man. And I'm from Chester, where we held the event at. I'm from that city, and all the brothers who played the major part in seeing this thing become a success were from out. They were from outside the city, but they're just brothers with like minds, like myself, who want to see their people come up. So that's right. Why we've been taking off, and we just gotta like the ball is rolling now. So, and this is a great platform that we're on now. So I definitely appreciate it.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
You know what? As we spoke earlier in the pre-broadcast interview, and I was explaining to you what motivated us to do the show here, is for that reason. Matter of fact, one of the main reasons why I started this show was because of my situation in the shelter. We were taken out of our house, you know, and like I said, at the time I had not one but two newborn babies, because at the time my twins were only 3 months. Okay, in addition to the fact that I had six other children, five other children there at the same time, all young. At the time, all of them were under the age of 11. And, you know, it's like, when we got there, they knew what was going on. They, you know, these people were watching the mice and the roaches and the rats go by. They knew we didn't have a place to cook, you know, things to that effect. Nobody bothered to try to send us to, you know, places that you could get food from or you could do whatever. And then when we were in the place waiting to get a place, they gave us the most molded dry bread, molded bread to eat, to feed my children with. And I'm sitting there like, listen, it's not like I'm asking for filet mignon or a salmon steak, but the least you could do is give us food that's fresh.
Right.
You know, so
right.
But then going out there, you know, people knew you would pay somebody to overcrowd their house to take us in rather than give us that money to get our own apartment. It was so many things that they literally turned their backs on. We were listening to the people in the office, the same lady that you would talk about giving a flyer to that could have made a difference. Well, the equivalent to that type of person in our place would sit right at the front desk where we have to sign in and get our key or whatever it is, talking about how what they're planning to do as soon as they can get the hell out of here to go home to their families. And it was like the most degrading thing. And then, you know, you hear all these people that are you, you know, they're your race, they've been through your struggle, but now they have a little title, and you get the worst attitude as if anything you ask them for is coming from their personal stash. I even had people that were taking my children's social security numbers out of the our personal so-called confidential files and filing taxes with our kids' numbers. So this is what they thought to do to us while we were homeless, and they were taking our kids' things and going and filing taxes with it. The only reason why one of them got caught was because he couldn't go through without me giving him, you know, like verification that he was part of me. And I told them, if you don't take my children's name out of there, I'm going to go to the police so fast. You know, but this is what they do. Right. They don't care about giving us a better place. And that was one of the reasons why I got here to say this show was going to be called On the Edge, and it's on the edge for a reason. I don't sugarcoat a damn thing. And to see you say on a videotape, and Professor, I thank you for providing that, was, you know, the brothers out here, you know, we can't get the brothers to help us distribute. You had to sit there and speak to this man in a wheelchair, which I saw, you know, precisely. And nobody knows that one thing, the small one thing that absolutely takes nothing from you to do could have saved somebody's life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
Definitely.
No.
Definitely. Yeah, I just don't get it from the brothers. I just don't get why brothers are scared to be about something positive. That's one thing. I honestly don't want to say I gave up, but I moved on. You know, because we'll all be stuck wondering who's going to take the lead. Because I hear so many brothers throughout the years say, "Who's going to be the next leader?" Al Sharpton ain't nothing. And like, brother, why are we still waiting on Al Sharpton? Why are we still waiting on Jesse Jackson? You know, Right. Why are we waiting on Obama? How about Ishmael? How about Carl Jones? How about Hakeem?
Yes.
How about Rod?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Brothers, that's because they too lazy, they too scared. Most of it, it has to do with being scared. Because brothers scared to stand up and speak their mind. And you know, it's not about being a tough guy or anything of that nature. It's just about, you know, standing up for your community and what you believe in, especially. We all got babies out here. The majority of us got children out here.
Right.
And you want to create an environment that's better for them. And that's what we're trying to do with the book bag drive and that closing cabinet drive, is just so the youth can see us in a totally different light than what they see on television or they just see walking up and down the street in the neighborhood. Like, there's brothers out here that's really willing to sacrifice some of their own personal, you know, time so others can come up, so others
right.
can get a smile on their face and things like that. So,
right. You know, You know, I've always make it a point to express to people that we have a history of past leaders that are no longer with us, God rest their soul, that have left a solid foundation for our people. We don't realize the generations today in today's society don't realize the awesome power that were left that is left at our feet, but we're too lazy to bend over and pick up the power that is placed at our feet, that is laid here for us. You know, there was a foundation that was laid for us to take and carry on to bring it up to a higher level than where we are right now. But it's just laying dormant. It's just laying dormant. All it takes is just a little bit of work. It's not going to take a whole lot of work once enough of us come together and get united on one front.
Right. You know, it's funny because
Okay. I was going to say,
to piggyback off what you just said, that's the truth. Because this clothes, this drive we just did, it was basically we didn't put up any money. We didn't
right.
put up. We all we did was go
right.
to our closets and pull out old clothes that we're not wearing and sitting around in the house, and got our friends to do the same and took them down to the center. It cost nothing financially because, you know, normally when we tell a child to get brothers and sisters to dig in their pockets, that's when everybody get a little, you know, standoffish. But this was an event where, you know, you on Facebook, you on social media bragging about Jordans and Gucci and all this
oh,
other stuff that you got. So I'm pretty sure if you quote unquote, you know, you on here pump faking that you got all this nice stuff, there should be some stuff in your house that you don't wear no more that's outdated that you should easily pass off. You know, that's
right.
all we was asking for.
Right.
That's all we
right.
was asking for.
You have so many people. You have so many people today that is stuck on this self thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about you. It's not about you because the Creator, when he brings blessings upon you, it's blessings on you in order for you to be a blessing to someone else. And people don't realize that. You know, if you bless someone else, that's going to make your blessings even more. So this way you
right.
pass a blessing on to somebody else, and somebody else passes on a blessing to somebody else, it's going to carry on. But nobody is thinking about that. Everybody's talking about, well, I got mine, you got to get yours. No, no.
Mm-hmm.
No, let's get out of that crab in the bucket syndrome, people.
Right.
Let's not keep pulling people back down and then talking down or looking down on somebody. If you want to look down on somebody, look down on somebody when you're trying to help pick them up.
Right.
That's
Absolutely.
The way that's supposed to work.
Absolutely.
You know, things are so twisted today that we have to take the responsibility of untwisting things. They have been so long twisted up, and it's long overdue for it to happen.
He couldn't have hit the nail on the head any better. And you always say, you know, we've done too much pointing the fingers and talking instead of teaching, and that's definitely something else. One of the things, and Ishmael, you're new to my panel, so you're not familiar with the phrases that I use, but one of the things that we suffer with is what I call the NIMBY disease, not in my backyard. And we tend to, whatever personally affects our space, is all we care about. Whatever we can cash and carry is all we care about. Whatever we can sound good with. Now, I think that I spoke with you earlier, and I told you about one of the things I like to call the Facebook activist. Okay?
Right.
We get these people, you know, that sit on their butts. They go on Google. They read some controversial, you know, article. They looked it up. They read it. Some big old word came up that they may not have understood properly. So they go and they Google what it means. Now they're really like, whoa, that's really messed up. And then here we go with shaking my head, shaking my damn head, shaking my head. Stop shaking your head. Shake a leg. You know, shake a leg.
Yeah.
Get up there and get some moving. I spoke speak all the time. Listen, this is not about horn blowing, but I'm down in the bucket with everybody else, and I'm not trying to sit there and have people, you know, clip at me. I'm not going to wait for Obama. I'm not waiting for Jesse Jackson. I think that man is busy trying to get his vocabulary together, you know? So I'm not trying to sit there and wait for him to come along and find a solution. I'm waiting to see what the hell I can do with the little bits I have. If I've got a pot, some mortar, a rock, and a bowl, I'm making rock soup for my kids today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is it. Yeah. It is about, like you said, what about Ishmael? What about, you know, Professor Jones? What about Zeddy? What about, you know, Katie? What can we do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, every single day, whatever I can do to lift up, I will.
Right.
One of the things that would shock you, and this is Professor Carl Tone Jones speaking, just for the audience to know, one of the things that will shock you about these brothers that put this group together, I'm glad they invited me in. I'm a new member to the New Millennium Leaders. One of the things that will shock you is their modesty. Their modesty, this is something that's a selfless act. And I saw what was going on. I said, wait a minute, we need to get the word out. I just turned the camera on. I just started taking pictures. I started following everybody around. And, you know, we take pictures for the event, but I said, no, we need to put some real publicity onto this because, you know, we always have the ratchet situation perpetuated in our community with the World Star Generation and all the other things that are going on. And we need to put this information out and say, listen, there are some brothers out there that are trying to make a difference, that are trying to be good influences and working within the community, and we're dedicating time. You know, we could say things like we're busy. You know, some of these brothers work 2 and 3 jobs, but even the brothers that couldn't show up donated. I mean, what do we have, like 15 bags left, 15 trash bags left over clothes?
I'm talking about stacked four to the top. Then we walked across the street to another ministry. We walked across the street to another ministry. Like, the brothers bought in. Like they said, you build, they come. Like, there's a lot of brothers, like Professor just said, that couldn't come, but they were coming on Facebook that night saying, listen, I'm down such and such street. Can somebody meet me? Come down here. I got 5 bags. You know? So there's some brothers out there that's willing to, you know, put some action behind the words, so to speak. And I'm proud of myself being part of it.
There are very many good people that are out there. And like I said to Ishmael, he's new, but you remember, Professor, that one of the things that I did was to have a segment about, like, the good men that are out there, that they're being, you know, thrown into the back because all you hear about is the deadbeat baby daddies and the cheaters and the people that want to, you know, pick up whatever honeys they can get. And meanwhile, on you know, over in Frontierland, all right, we have women playing these same games, but yet they're complaining that they can't find good men. They can't find good men because you guys are busy making these good men be distrustful once again. And then one of the things that I'll say back to what tonight's topic is about is that there's good guys in our race that's out there hustling, struggling, giving a damn, going over to people that other people would look past and roll their eyes or step over. You know, we were one of those. And we're people with brains, with aspirations, with goals. You know, we're stuck in a physical situation that we can't get out of at the moment, but we're not letting our surroundings absorb us. And that's the thing. The problem is too many stereotypes are being proven by example. And what example is too many of our brothers are standing on the corner being loud at 50 with their 22-year-old sons and their 14-year-old daughters. And they're standing out there with their pants hanging down. And that's what everybody wants to think that we are. They're not,
you know,
we like
talked
you.
About that yesterday, and, you know, about the agenda. See, we need to push forth our agenda now. And that's one of the reasons why we have the video out. The video also will be a part of my DVD package that's coming out in about 2 days. The poor etiquette lecture that we shot on Sunday, and the video will be included in the DVD. That'll be available in 2 days. And, you know, Katie, I'll work with you on the sponsorships because I'm sitting here advertising on your show. But the bottom line is we also have the actual video is up on YouTube. And if you type in New Millennium Leaders, Just type in New Millennium Leaders. It'll pop to the top of the screen. And we need to get this word out to show people to listen. There are brothers out there. I mean, it's heartfelt, and you should read the comments that people are making after watching that video. I mean, Katie, they sound like you, where people are saying, man, I want to start this for my city. I want to do this for my community. This is true black consciousness. These are the compliments, these are the comments that are coming forth, and, you know, it's moving me. I keep checking because I'm saying, damn, you know, this is going on over and over, and I'm telling you, I mean, it's been up to 2 days, and for a video that really doesn't have celebrity backing and so forth, it has not been advertised anywhere. We have over 1,200 views. It's probably about 1,300 views, and it's only been up for 2 days. So, wow. You know, we're really trying to get the word out and let people know that that we have some people out here. Funny thing is, today in the mall, I was at the Willow Grove Mall, which is a suburb of Philadelphia. I was with some clients. And while I was in the mall, we went to the Apple Store. The Apple Store, you have all the computers and iPods out and iPads and things of that nature. So I saw a brother and sister looking at an iPad, and I walked over to them. And I said, would you mind if I show you something? And I showed this brother and sister the video. I pulled it up on an iPad while we were over at the store. They watched it. After the first 2 minutes, they were saying, wow, well, who can we give some money to? And I said, wow. It just hit me like that. And I said, it caught me off guard. So, you know, I gave them my card. And I know because I'm going to actually, you know, we're going to put a New Millennium Leaders page up on my website. That's coming. It's already under construction. So I gave them my card, and we're still going through the logistics of all that within the group. But the bottom line is, it's like when people see that message, they know it's a good thing, and they want to help out. Now imagine if a lot of other people see that and they start New Millennium Leaders or similar type programs in their cities and their necks of the woods. And you have people as passionate like Ishmael is. You know, this brother was running out. I caught him. He was running in and out of the shelter trying to get more people. And I said, man, you know, Ish, next time you go out, let me go with you so I can catch some of this on the camera. And so when we walked out, everything was organic. We didn't script anything. And I was upset because the camera was malfunctioning. We had a lot more footage that we could have put forth. But I think with that clip that we saw, you saw enough to see that these brothers are coming together to do some real good things. And I'm honored and humbled to be a part of this group because they're walking it.
And you know what? I was honored just looking at it because it's everybody, like we spoke about yesterday, the media loves, you know, getting their stories and making sure that there's dramatic effects.
What?
And you're getting dramatic effects. You're getting the music and the reporters are looking horrible. You know, they're looking all like, you know, you got to see this, and this boy's been missing, and someone got killed, and, you know, all of these things. And meanwhile, there's people out there like Ishmael that's walking around with three other people or four other people just doing their thing on a holiday week, no doubt, while everybody else is busy trying to get, you know, the homes for their families to do whatever. You know, this guy is out there trying to make sure that whatever little bits he can give to make somebody's day a little better, he's doing. And there's not one person out there that is besides the group that's, you know, that's walking the streets and doing whatever, that's out there trying to make a difference. So, Ishmael, is there a way that, you know, people can contact you, or, you know, if they are in the area and would like to help, or if there's other things that they can do to, you know, to branch out a bit?
Well, right now, as far as the New Millennium Leaders, being able to be contacted, like Professor Jones stated, what about us website?
The What About Us website.
Yeah, we're trying to get the New Millennium Leaders uploaded on that page. And like you said, hopefully in a couple of days, that will be a way. And a way of contacting me will be through Facebook, Ishmael Fitzgerald, and also my personal email. You know, it's Ibn Malik at Yahoo. That's IbenMalik@yahoo.com.
And that's probably basically it right now, because we're about to go back into playing the stage. We're planning on getting with Professor Jones and just up in March and holding some type of an event at the Black and Nobel bookstore in Philadelphia, PA. So we're planning that right now. That's what we're in the process of doing right now. So outside of that, that's the next major event that's coming up.
Okay, right now, are you just based in Philadelphia?
Yes, well, the majority of the group is from Philadelphia, and I'm the only one I live in Chester. So it's most majority of brothers are from Philadelphia, and also brothers from New Jersey and the tri-state area. We got some brothers that moved out of Philadelphia that's living in New York and all over. So right now, mainly we've been dealing with Philadelphia, the Philadelphia area, the tri-state area.
Okay, because I was just had something that was dropped into my spirit, and I was thinking maybe we could do some type of networking. I'm here in Toledo, Ohio, and
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of homeless situations here, and then we have a youth gang problem here.
Okay,
you know, and I work with a lot of the youth here because
mm-hmm.
simply because I used to be one of them at one point. I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
Out of Brownsville, and I was labeled a menace to society at one point.
Right.
And right now I feel like I have an obligation to the young people here and the people that don't have some of the things that I was fortunate to have that I try and help every day. You know,
okay.
I'm a member of a church here. I'm an ordained mm-hmm. deacon, and I try to do as much as I can along with my church, and then there's quite a few things that I do on my own. You know, I'm in forced retirement because of a neck and spinal cord injury that I suffered on my job. But I felt like the Creator closed one door, but He opened up another door for me to do some other work that was more important.
Okay.
You know, so if there's any kind of way that we could possibly network together, we could possibly get together and I can give you some information to get in contact with me through
mm-hmm.
my church or just at my email address.
That's perfect. I work with the youth as well. I've been working with the youth for seven years now. I was a part
mm-hmm.
of a Saturday school program that dealt with the truancy and the children that were getting, you know, suspended and things of that nature in school.
Right.
And right now I work with a leadership council out in Chester. You know, like your story is similar to mine. You know, in high school I had dropped out, and when trying
right.
to enroll back in high school, they had me written off as one of the two, as they would say, two worst students in the school at the time. And I had got a mentor, and the mentor, you know, he changed my life. You know, my father was murdered
right.
when I was younger. So the mentor came at a perfect time, and that's what created that type of passion in me for the youth and for the community.
Right.
I knew how that me, and I know the pain. I know the struggle of people counting you out and thinking that
right.
it's over for you. So that's
right.
why that's the main reason I go hard. Like, that's the main reason I go hard, because there's so many young brothers that I've spoken to throughout the years that I see now that in their early 20s, and they still remember me. And they might say something that I told them back in the day that I said from my heart. I don't remember the actual word, but it resonated in them. It was something that they took, you know, and
right.
built it off of. So I can definitely,
right.
you know, if you want to build, we can talk, communicate,
yeah.
see how we can link up and change
yeah, let's
ideas.
Do that.
I'm perfectly
fine, because I was one of the ones that was given a chance by a judge,
right.
mind you. You
mm-hmm.
know, I was looking at 10 to 15 years in the penitentiary, but he gave me a choice to do the 10 to 15 years or do 3 years in the military, and I wound up doing 6 years in the military, and that's where my life started turning around.
Okay.
Because I had a negative outlook on life and on some people, you know, but things happen for a reason. Go ahead,
gentlemen, I have to take a break, okay? I will be back in a minute. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, this week's segment will be sponsored by Morris Rights LLC. And Brother Hakeem Bey is definitely on our list of good people for the Christmas holiday. So I'll be back in just a minute. And keep a lock
for
you.
The On the Edge Show with KD Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. KD and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered. featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com on The Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there. New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
You're listening to On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. We are in the middle of a very intriguing discussion. It's a continuation of yesterday's topic. We are doing part two today where we are speaking on the stereotypes versus the truth about African Americans in America. We are speaking on how all of the good things that are about us are being put to the back burner, and basically a lot of the things that we do, we bring this opinion onto ourselves. But one of the things that we're speaking on is when good things are happening among us, how we seem to find struggles to get people to help us out. Now, we have Ishmael Fitzgerald on the guest panel tonight. We have Professor Carlton Jones, who actually was the affiliate and hooked us up. We have a whole heap of very intriguing panelists tonight, and some of them have been a little quiet only because the situation in conversation has been great. We will be getting to them in just a minute, so bear with me as I bring in all our panelists back in. Ishmael, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Hakeem? Okay. Rod?
I'm here.
All right. Professor? Professor, if your phone is on mute, unmute it so you can get back on. Deacon?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, we have one panelist coming in. Just hang on a second. Welcome to the show. Call, you on the air?
Hello, this is Carlos Ellerby Jones, better known as Stalo.
Hey, Stalo.
All right. Hey, Stalo.
Okay. Stalo, you're new to the... Well, actually, I got to give Rod the mic for a minute because he was in waiting. And Rod, you know, give me your spill on tonight's subject.
Let's see. You were talking about stereotypes. I came in late. The stereotypes that I see perpetuated in today's society, which you can see in the media, a show like Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Right.
They show us at our worst.
Yeah, definitely.
Fighting, yelling. No, that's not good. And I see it in my own neighborhood. There's this game going on now, which the cool young people play. That is from ages 14 to like 19. They just walk on the street, you know, normal. And any unsuspecting adult will just get sucker punched and knocked the hell out. And it's a game.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm sure I've heard of it. I don't think it's just in Connecticut that they play.
No, it's very prominent out here in New York. It's actually something that they are putting out as one of, like, the top crimes, you know, along with this poor boy that's still been missing since October the 4th, my birthday, of all things. But it's really a sad thing that this is what it is that we, you know, like I mentioned in previous shows, as well is that, you know, we tend to adopt a really silly thing to culturalize and call our own, and then we make it a fad, and it's the worst of us. Yet when other cultures adopt it, like Ishmael, you knew, so yesterday I was speaking on how, you know, hip-hop, we've been criticized for it, we've been, you know, called animals for it, we've been called all sorts of names, but now almost every single white artist that's coming out is not coming out with any white sound. They're coming out with hip-hop sounding, you know, samples of hip-hop or things to that effect, and it's glamorized because it's not coming from us, the people who originated it. And this is
does
a really
Eminem count?
Eminem, well, I'm going to put Eminem on a whole different...
Yeah.
I'm going to put Eminem on a whole different pedestal because, you know, he's just as down with us as we are. But the whole thing is that, you know, when it comes down to something that we've adopted on our own, which shows our creativity, yet we don't know how to nurture that creativity to produce for us. And then... when we have people like Ishmael that's out there doing something that's free to the community, even that is met with this internal criticism. When you have people, as we spoke about yesterday, Jay-Z, Kanye West, two people that are in a hell of a position to actually open a real big door and possibly will get instant success with it. Okay, they have the inside knowledge of what fashions would work, what type of styles would go, you know, and give it to black entrepreneurs and put it back. Yesterday, Carl, you brought up something that was a real disturbing but truthful question. Why should they? Why should they if we're not raising our own standards? Why should the other cultures not come into our neighborhoods and rape our land and do whatever it is that they want to do when we're servicing these people?
Well, basically, the way I wanted to present that is we have the ability to hold people accountable. We have the ability to hold entertainers accountable. And if we want our entertainers to do things in our neighborhoods, then we have to withhold the dollar, withhold the money. You know, I'll give you an example. The Jewish community has spoken loudly about how they feel about Mel Gibson. And they've spoken with their silence. They've spoken with their effective ignoring of Mel Gibson. You know, after his tirade, he hasn't been in a movie since. And not only that, he's pretty much moved out of the consciousness of Hollywood. Now that's what I'm saying. We can learn from that and say basically we are the number one consumers. We spend $1.1 trillion on things we consume, not just our energy bill, not our rent, but things that we consume. So when we get to the point where we can exert some discipline and restraint and hold people accountable, then we can start asking them for money. Then we can start saying, listen, in order to scratch our back, you have to scratch – I'm sure in order for us to scratch your back, you have to scratch ours. Right. So when people like Jay-Z says – you know, his presence is charity enough. Well, okay, cool. Then my presence is charity as long as I'm not purchasing any of your goods. And until we can sit down at the table and talk about, well, my record sales are failing, what can I do to get the support of the community? You have to support the community. Until we get to that point, you know, we really can't say anything to these entertainers because they're laughing all the way to the bank. So, one of the things
could you just hold that thought 1 minute? I do have to make a little bit of a request to my panelists. I really need the background noise, you know, not to emanate into the panel because it actually is interfering, and there's a lot of people that are calling in with that background noise, and I really need you guys to respect the rest of us and try to minimize what's in the background. So, you know, that, I needed to say that because I'm hearing a lot of shuffling as it stands right now. And usually when I bring other panelists in, I'm hearing people calling them in the background. I'm hearing TVs, things to that effect. If you're calling the show to comment, ladies and gentlemen, please try to, at least for the time that you're on the air, control what's in the background. I really need that to be stated. Continue, Professor. I do apologize.
Well, that's not a problem. So... one of the things that we talked about this Saturday, this Saturday and this Sunday, is the fact that we have the ability to get out there and take take control of our communities. We have the ability to get out there and put grassroots movements together. I mean, just a couple of meetings and brothers that really are concerned put together that event on Saturday. And sitting down at the lecture, you know, I think the most powerful piece of the lecture was when we had people interject their issues and their points. You know, we had a brother from Philadelphia who was an administrator in schools all over the tri-state area, and he was able to give some helpful insight as to how we can influence charter schools by going to the charter meetings, by influencing the curriculum. You know, he also gave information about how we can influence in terms of what's going on with the properties in our cities, with the zoning hearings and things of that nature. So we had people break out talking about how other communities are having meetings on Saturday mornings. Every Saturday morning they get together and they have meetings. And they have meetings discussing different things, different projects that they're going to go through, that they're going to deal with, different things, that different agendas, how they're going to address the schools, and they share it with their children every Saturday morning. So we can do these things. It's not that we can't. It's just that we are so hung up on materialism. We're hung up a hatred for who we are, so we try to buy our way out of that hatred. You know, one quick point, and then I get long-winded. So one quick point. I was just watching 12 Years a Slave. I didn't watch the whole movie yet. But I got it through, you know, one of the neighborhood connections. So I'm watching 12 Years a Slave, and at the beginning of the movie, they said some very telling things. And it was after the brother was drugged, lost his freedom, and he was snatched up, and they were in a boat, and they were heading down toward Georgia. And it was three brothers in the seat in the back, and they were talking about a revolution. Talking about rebelling and breaking out. And, you know, one of the brothers responded and said, listen, we are three Africans who were kidnapped. You have people here who were born slaves. They're not going to fight with you because they were born slaves. They are going to respond like slaves respond. And then when you think about that and you think about the impact that has on today's community, where everybody is conforming to what's expected of us, the low expectations of the community. I mean, we were walking through, and there was a brother that we didn't get on tape, Ish walked up to him and said, hey, brother, we have some things. We like coffee. And the brother turned around and was like, whoa, man, get out of my face. And we looked at each other like, man, what are we offering you? You know, we had some other people that at first were standoffish, so they didn't even want the help, because they're not used to seeing it from us. And it's tell them what happened when the others were out there doing their charitable program that morning.
I'll go back to the brother that basically I would say disrespected us. You know, I reached out to him initially for a handshake. That's how I was greeting everybody with my hand on. How you doing, brother? And he turned his shoulder to me and was like, no. So I was just like, beloved, you're not going to shake my hand? He was like, no, I'm not shaking your hand. So that's how that interaction just went left totally from the start. This was an elder. This was a brother you would think would want to hear a young brother out who's trying to do something. But going back to, it was the same day across the street at the other ministry that it was their big donation day. And it looked like a presidential brigade, you know, with vans and vans and vans and trucks of the others donating, you know. And the brothers was out there, you know, smiling and grinning, you know. I mean, just so excited. And it's cool to see others help our people. Like, that ain't the point I'm making. Like, because that's welcome as well, because we are in conditions where we need all the help we can get and receive.
Right.
But it's just amazing sometimes how the response is compared to how you respond to your own brothers for help, you know, because it's the same thing. Like, at the same place we donated bags to afterwards. And I mean, those brothers in there were happy and excited about us donating. But when you walk through the community, like I would say about seven out of the 10 people initially didn't want to, you know, engage, you know, until we stayed on top of them about what we were offering and what was going on around the corner, and then they started listening. So it's just that self-hate more than anything.
I'm sorry. Professor brought up an interesting comment just a little bit, a few minutes ago, when he said that we spend the most, you know. And I remember when I was in college taking an economics class, and Lord knows I kept trying to dodge that class. But, you know, they were talking about the ratio of, like, the poverty line versus spending. And do you know that one of the things I think that actually got me back into loving and economics was they were saying that even people who's at a $0 line will spend a dollar. And it's true. I mean, I see even in my own surroundings how there are people that won't have, you know, a decent amount of food for the month for the amount of people that live in there, but they'll have the best cars, or they'll have, you know, the $300 pair of sneakers, which gets me because within the next week or two, that style you just bought is going to be upgraded and outdated. So
yeah.
It's like, how do you find $300 to get, or $600 for an iPhone? You know, things to that effect, and you can't eat. And then, you know, those are the people that will be the first ones that will be saying, you know, I need a cup of sugar or something to that effect. Meanwhile, they're also the same people that won't sit there or will look at you like you must be crazy to ask them to invest that same $300 in something like a portfolio if your daughter wants to model, or a business that's going to pay off in the future, because it's not instant gratification. And that's just the whole point. Anything that you get instantly is going to go just as quickly. And that's the whole thing. People are so busy, as we spoke about yesterday, Professor, and the rest of the panel. We spoke about how everybody's complaining about what people have at the top, and they're looking at the top to happen now. Those people, some of them are trust fund babies, yes, because Paris Hilton has absolutely no purpose to me, okay? But everybody isn't a trust fund baby. So they worked their way up. They saved. They didn't go to movies every single week. They didn't buy the latest iPhones right away. They went out there and they saved and did what they had to do. They sacrificed their parties. They did whatever to get where they are. Why are you hating on someone else's success when you have the same tools, maybe not in the same abundance, but you have the same tools to start something? And one of the things we had in the previous segment when I was speaking about women in the economy was it's not just about you going out there with a whole bunch of fancy flyers or whatever the case is. Find free forums. Facebook is the first one. Instead of you talking about twerking, as you mentioned, Ishmael, talk about, you know, I have a business. Maybe you have 1,000 friends and only 3 will see it, but that's 3 people.
Mm-hmm.
That's 3 people who might have 3 friends, who might have 3 brothers, who might have 3 sisters, and they will have 3 other friends. Eventually, you'll start small and you get somewhere if you keep at it. Okay? Why not use what you have? Because
right.
If you have to be a big fish in a little pond for a little while, you're going to get a lot more attention.
Right.
A lot more attention, and it's like, it's ridiculous. I'm not going to sit there and hate on Jay-Z when Jay-Z, whatever little games he played or whatever little pockets he had to sniff and do whatever with, he got there. I'm going to be a little more responsible and community and, you know, social aware when I get there, but, you know, he got there. Why are you hating on him? So it's just, it's like, you know, little things like this. One of the things that my co-host had said in that exact segment was you start networking. If you bake brownies and you go to a soccer game for your children, that's your first networking area right there. Somebody will buy your cupcake for a dollar, and now you can start talking that I have a business that I'm running, that I'm doing certain things. And those of you that are starting that little business, learn your local laws. Learn your local business law. Learn a little bit about business, because even though there's a state government or there's a country government, your state laws are a lot more takes precedence over the state laws. So learn what it is that you need to do in your particular state. Learn what options there are out there. And even if you're not getting the whole big lottery, at least you're getting a piece of it to start somewhere.
Right.
So these are the things that you can do instead of slapping your gums and complaining and being, you know, 6 hour long. My God, we're in a group that I swear you can see people posting well into midnight of the next day. And I can guarantee you that the ones that have the most posts and the most controversy and the most quote-unquote knowledge about our people are not doing a damn thing to make that happen.
Right.
You know what's funny about that, Katie, is I can recall one of the first times I joined the Real World Black News and Discussion Group, and I posted a video that I had pulled off of a white supremacist website. And it was talking about how they were trying to convince everybody that African kings and chiefs had contributed to the slave trade. And the
right.
brother called me an Uncle Tom. So when I went to his page, I just wanted to see what his contributions were. And I noticed that this guy was a keyboard gangster.
Sure.
I challenged him. And the bottom line is, you know, and I'm out there in the streets. I'm out there in the community. And that's why I feel so at home with the New Millennium Leaders, because all these brothers are from the street, they're out in the streets, and we don't want our children to have to go through the things that we went through, in and out of
right.
trouble, dodging
yeah.
things here and there, seeing people's getting, you know, we don't need to rehash all the things. But the bottom line is, you know, when the brother came to me like that, I was taken back, because you know, all he had to do was click my name and see what things are going on that I'm dealing with. And I don't even post half of the stuff that I'm involved with. And I'm not trying to yank my own chain here. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, we have so many people, and we talked about this on Sunday, who are talking and their involvement is strictly intellectual through social media. They're not getting involved. They're not going out in the street. They're not meeting the people. You know, Ishmael was talking about, you know, where he was going. But he was really, and like I said, these brothers are so modest, they don't even really tell you about all the things all the strings that they're pulling. This brother was going to work, coming home from work, on his way home from work, meeting with people, getting community supporters. I mean, this was going on for like 3 weeks straight, where every single day he's on the phone, he's contacting brothers, we're linking up through social media, we're calling each other, everybody's talking. But this thing was this whole process was a lot of energy. But at the same time, you still see at the end of it, you still see his passion, his drive, and his fight to make it happen, and you see him out there. And that's what I wanted people to see. I wanted people to see him out there. I wanted people to see the brothers out there. We weren't somewhere in a cubbyhole. We weren't somewhere behind a keyboard. We were out there with the people and touching the people. And that's what we need more of. We need the brothers that can go out there and, you know, we didn't catch a lot of the other things that were going on, but we saw youths out there. Listen, come here, young brother. Come over. Let's talk for a second. And even though they weren't interested and coming in and grabbing clothes, you know, it's the foolish pride thing kicks in. But even though they weren't interested in grabbing clothes, they did stop and talk.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Right. They did.
Yeah, and that was like the best moment of when we walked around for me, because
yeah.
most of all, I think it was four young men. I don't think any of them was older than 15 or 16. They definitely was about
right.
15 and under. And initially, you know, they laughed us off. And one of them wouldn't shake my hand initially. Then they all shook my hand, and they stood there and listened to it, because it was a connection that I could draw that we all had. When I found out they were
right.
on their way to the local gym, I knew, you know, some of the reps in the gym. But we just had a nice little discussion about, you know, brothers and what was going on and how to break down the stereotypes of, you know, polo and, you know, the fancy clothes or the name
right.
brand clothes. Because one of the young men, you could tell by his body language, he wanted to come back.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Remember, they kept saying he wanted to come back, but because, you know, he was outnumbered, he didn't come back. So, and I think Professor said this on Saturday. After our event, after all three of our events, you would think brothers would be ready to scatter once the event is over. But we probably stayed there for like another hour just talking
mm-hmm.
about the different
interactions we might have had with the kids that came for the book bags or some of the people that came out for the clothes, and then we sit there and talk as men and brothers and just to feel like you feel good. Like Saturday, I mean, I was floating. I was floating all the way into the lecture on Sunday into Sunday night. You know, I mean, Sunday night I just was sitting there like, man, this might have been the best weekend I've ever had. Like, that I can remember in a long time. Like, a long time. Because I just kept seeing all the people and hearing all the stories from the people that we touched. And one of my friends, their younger brother, he came out. He's not even a part of our group, but he came out and saw what took place firsthand. So he reached out to me later on, and he was like, Ish, you know what's crazy? When I thought y'all put this event together, I thought it was strictly for, like, homeless people or quote-unquote bums. He was like, man, because he came down there and donated. He was like, yo, it was regular people in there. Like, regular people in there coming to get clothes. You know, he's like, imagine the humility of that, of somebody that's just, and I'm like, that's what it's about, though. So those are the type of brothers that I want to build with myself, because I'm like, this brother, he don't care about the stereotypes. So I can't believe you went there and got some used clothes. Like, no, I need some clothes. You know, I'm going in there. Them brothers giving out clothes or food or toys or something for my family. We can benefit from this. I don't care who think I'm doing. Like, who thinks it's wrong? You know?
Absolutely, Ishmael. Absolutely. There are people out there that are working and still trying to make ends meet. You know, like between cuts in the economy and programs that are supposed to be for people, homeowners that are struggling to make their mortgage, you know, things to that effect. This is the problem. Why is it, you know, I remember going to a supermarket with a lady that lives about three doors down from me who I know is well off, okay? This woman sat there, and I remember I had about four wagons of food I had to check out because I have a large family. So when I go there, you know, just 1 week of shopping is like, you know, 3 weeks to the average person. So I'm standing behind this woman who had three items. And this woman held up the line between counting our pennies and counting our clipped coupons. Okay? Meanwhile, the people behind me that are on the same EBT card I was on is busy like, I'm not getting no coupons, girl. I paid this. Are you kidding me? It reminds me of the Everybody Hates Chris episode where the mother's always saying, I'm not going out with food stamps. You know?
Right.
This is what we do. We have this false pride when we could use it. You know, tell what people think about you. You know you. Tell what people are looking in from the outside and is not bothering to get to know who you are. You know, do what you have to do, because while you're busy trying to play the pride game, your children are not eating.
Right. And what kills me is the adults with this pride thing. There's a saying is only a fool will refuse instruction or take any type of advice. That's a fool for you. Now, as you get older, you're supposed to get wiser. You're not supposed to get dumber. You know, and then and today's society with some of these young children out here today, they don't know better because nobody is teaching them. If you don't know better, there's no way possible you're going to do better. And my thing is somewhere along the line, our generation of elders, and we are the elders now, and we're supposed to be the future leaders. It's time for us to step it up to another level, higher, a lot, much higher than where we were before, because now is that a zone right now to where an alert alarm is going off, and
is
we need to pay attention to that alarm that's going off, because you have a lot of our young people have such negative attitudes and feel like they don't need to listen to any instruction from an older person, because some of these older people are not setting a better example for them. You know, how are you going to tell a child not to do something when you're doing something yourself?
Right.
You know, and I see a lot of that going on now. You see a lot of these so-called parents that they call themselves being parents, but I don't see it. You can't be a friend and a parent. It's like trying to mix oil with water. You know, you can't be their buddy. Look, I'm your parent. I'm not your friend. I'm not somebody you out here talking to in the street. That's not going to work. But that's what you have a lot of problems with some of these so-called parents today. They're trying to do everything to please these kids Please, my mother, Lord, I thank God every day that she's still here, and to see that everything that she poured into me was not wasted. When everybody used to say that I was going to be nothing or was going to have anything or was going to amount to anything, like I was going to be like my dad, was going to be a drunk and die alcoholic. But I thank God for the confidence from my mother. You know, and we need to just start grabbing snatching these kids back up and say, look, this the way it is. Look, I love you. If I didn't love you, I wouldn't be in your face like this. That's not happening. You talk to some of these kids out here on the street, the word love is not brought to them enough. A lot of them will tell you, well, don't nobody care about me. Don't nobody love me. Why not? I love you, and I don't even know you. You know?
Yeah,
it has to be brought to them. If we don't bring it to them, we're going to lose them. We're going to lose them. And I don't believe that these young people are lost today. I don't believe that. I don't believe that because they used to say that about me. I never thought I was lost.
You know, the irony is, Ish can tell you, these things that we're talking about, you know, the universe has a way of working through us all, and the Most High has a way of working through us all, because these were the same topics that we were talking about at the lecture. These were the same things we were talking about at the event on Saturday, you know, as a group. You know, how can we get to these youths? The youths aren't crazy. They're just rejecting a system that they know is not taking them in, a system that's not for them. They just don't know it, but the spirit is in them. The spirit within them is rejecting the system, and that's why they're out there doing these crazy things. And we need to get them some guidance. We need to be the direction for them because, like I always say, the youth still have that ancestral fighting spirit. They still have that. And they are fighting, and because they don't have any direction, they're fighting and killing one another. They're fighting and killing themselves. So we have to be the ones, and, you know, groups like the New Millennium Leaders, the radio shows like the On the Edge show, things like this need to get more exposure. So, you know, that's why we're you know, pushing all this information. That's why, you know, I said, man, it, the spirit moved me. You know, the whole idea of filming the event was organic. It didn't happen.
Right.
It wasn't like I planned it. I left my camera at home. I actually filmed the event with my phone. So it was just something that was time. It was time to show the world that this is how we need to do it from this day forward. We need to catalog it because too often we can whip out our cell phones and catch some ratchet behavior. They, you know, I saw ratchet behavior earlier, people fighting on a train over a football game. You know, you see ratchet behavior, and that's what people cling on to. I started to name the title the video, you know, Ratchet Fighting in Chester, just to get the people to click on the link and see what was going on. You know, sort of as a reverse psychology thing. But I didn't want to lose the spirit of the actual movie because I thought that was good enough. So, you know, it's some good things going on, and we need to get the information out. It was like what we talked about last night. We have pockets of good things going on, but we rarely ever have a chance to see what's going on across the country, see what's going on across the state, because we're not connected. So it's good to have a medium like this so that people, so Zeddy, you can hear about what's going on in Toledo, and I just friended you, Zeddy, so I need you to get back at me, so that we can make that connection and so that we can all link up and then maybe we can have something where we're talking now about something in Toledo and something in Philadelphia, something in Chester, something in New York, you know, something in Buffalo, something in Miami, you know, and, you know, so that we can start networking and getting those programs together. And this is a good medium. Facebook is a good medium. But the bottom line is now we're talking and now we're getting people to see that, damn, this is going on. And if you knew the stories and things of that nature, wasn't Chester like 3 years ago considered the murder capital of the world?
It was not even not the murder capital, but one of the worst
roughest cities in the United States. It's a small city, about 4.5 miles long. But I mean, it's hard. It's been hard hit. I'm sorry, excuse me.
So
I mean, hard hit, man.
Yeah, and you see the brothers in that city. You know, you see we're in that city. And I didn't bring that up to shine a negative light on Chester. I brought that up to show that, listen, this is us. So every time you look at somewhere and they say it's a rough spot, we're there because that's us. That's our home. You know, I felt like, damn, it could have been my neighborhood we were walking through. The bottom line is when we got out there, those are our people.
Right. And that's the point I was trying to get across on there. Cause, brother, you know, honestly, when I look at it, I just think brothers are scared, man. They scared to death of the youth. They scared to death of the youth, man. I from working in that youth group, the first youth group I worked in, when, you know, and it changed my mind about the youth. The things that's placed on some of these kids in their own households, when you got a mother and father who's not there or they got younger siblings who they got to take care of or make sure got to get to school before they get to school. It's so much stuff going on. Then you see, you know, when murders happen and things, violence that's taking place in the city all throughout the country, and you see brothers get online and post this post and, you know, these little whatever would never get an FD, you know, and it's just a whole bunch of foolishness. But there's never no energy towards, you know, we need to go out there and collar up these brothers. It's more or less like, man, they don't want to be helped, man. They going to kill each other off or go to jail. But I think it's more about fear. It's more about brothers, you know, scared to confront them and not even confront them in a negative way. But like you said, confront them with love. But it also on top of that love, we also have to have things to offer them, you know, because talk can go but so far, you know.
Right.
You got to be able to steer them in a direction where they can benefit from it as well, you know, because people out here hurting big time.
One of the things that was listed in the stereotypes, and a matter of fact, a lot of the pre-broadcast responders really agreed, and I put this on the list of partial truth based on internal actions, is that we're looking for something for nothing. We're lazy. We're looking for free stuff. And part of it is that the majority on the forefront that you see is everything that you deal with, everybody you deal with, is looking for you to give something extra. If you go to a Wendy's and, you know, they order the 99-cent burger off the dollar menu, they want about $3 worth of ketchup. And then they'll give you, you know, attitude like that. If you're sitting back, a lot of people think all we want to do is have multiple babies for, you know, to collect public assistance. Meanwhile, there's some people that's out there with the misconception that that's what to do. But the whole point is we do have people, like I said, once again, that are out there being overshadowed by the negative. Why? Because everybody's looking for the big cheese. Everybody's looking for it to happen, but nobody wants to put the work that it takes in there. I slightly disagree with the fear aspect only because I think that it's more contentment. It's more a fear of a change, actually. Oh, all right, well, you know, if I let go of this, I'm going to lose everything. If I give a little bit of what I have in my hand that I can count and see and smell and taste and touch, okay, then I'm going to have nothing left. This I might lose everything. The whole point is, in everything that pays you back, you've got to put a little bit out.
Yeah.
Somebody mentioned, and I believe it was on the victimization segment, where they said, prayer is great, wishing is great, but without action, where does it go?
Right.
You could sit on a group all day and talk about, and they robbing us blind, and they are trying, it's a conspiracy. There are so many conspiracy theorists up here that I'm getting to the point where I'm even starting to believe that it's something you find in one of these, like, you know, extreme paranormal shows on TV. There's so many things. Everything is not a conspiracy. Everything is not an agenda, not all the time. You're not going to go to the cereal island because there's chocolate and there's a specific slogan that it means. It's about blacks. It's about life, period. You use your brains. You're not silly people. So get out there and start looking at what to make a big fuss about. And while you're fussing, whatever you don't like about it, make a change.
Yes.
make a change. Listen, we did a show, and Deacon, this was the show based on the tax credit homes out where you were. Everybody is getting robbed of it. There was a corruption among the management companies with these tax credit homes. Everybody was suffering from it out in his area, and that's just one of the areas where the tax credit homes were being fraudulently managed, okay? Yet not one person from those areas listened in to see what was going on or called in to talk about their story or to see if there was a solution or if there was a link to get some help. Not one person. Meanwhile, they're sitting on property that legally and on paper is being deemed
people to donate, I guess, food and
book
bags and stuff.
Okay, so
it sounded kind of like in an echo chamber or something.
Yeah, not one person called in that's affected by that particular thing. There was people that were involved. We did an expose on an ACS corruption. Not one person that was affected by that particular worker that the exposure was on came forth. Who came forth was a white suburban Caucasian woman who had this happen to her. Meanwhile, we're bitching all the time.
People should be able to speak on behalf of others. And the thing is, a lot of times, I think that we really, really have to get. Okay, the topic is these myths that we are subscribing to are destroying us. So at the end of the day, we need to take back control of and we need to produce our own propaganda. We need to produce our own images for ourselves and take back control. Because until we do that, it's going to stay in the enemy's hands. At the end of the day, the enemy, who cares, you know, about anything other than what's really going on? Because at the end of the day, what we see is not what it is. Like continuing from last night, there's only 1% of people committing crimes. So at the end of the day, the images we see are mostly, if not all, lies. Even somebody mentioned the knockout game. You know, the knockout game, at the end of the day, the way it's presented and the way it's being presented, you know, is more so not only to encourage the action but to continue to vilify black children also, because a lot of the footage, from what I understand, that they used in a lot of news stations was up to 2 years old. And if that was
in foreign countries.
Yeah, in foreign countries. So if that's the case, then
we
at the end of, yeah, I know. Hold on. Hello? Yeah. We at the end of the day need to understand that nothing has been in our control until now with the new age and the social media and our hands on this and our hands on that. At this point, now we have to create our own myths, you know. And one way we can start doing that, and what I mean by that is at this point we need to really, really separate away from the mainstream and away from mainstream media. We keep bringing up the children. We kind of need to isolate them from that, you know. And some of the media and some of the grandiose stories that they need to know need to be about themselves. Maybe their family members, their great down south great-great-grandfather that was 8 feet tall or what have you. But these things, you know, sometimes when we're going through a lot of our own searches, you know, with ourselves, and I'm speaking from experience, sometimes we can bring children along with that, bring all people around us along with that, and at the same time, even that is spreading more knowledge, and now with more, you know, electronic means at our fingertips, you know, starting small, we can start creating our own mindsets, our own our own, if you will,
our own community norms.
Yeah, our new archetypes to be built on. Because the old archetypes we didn't create them. And most of them are false, and they're fiction. You know, they are. Think about this. Let's say we were all white. These myths would look totally different to us, wouldn't they?
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely.
Think about that.
Yeah.
And that's why they hold on to them.
It's totally different to us. That's because it's their myths.
Right.
Indeed.
But
right.
They're imposing them on you as if they are reality. And now it's up to you to break from that threshold. Something is holding you back, you see,
right.
All of it.
Well,
now
let me ask you something. I want to get the opinion of the panel on this question based on what you just said, Salem. Okay? It is their myth. And it looks different to them. And they're trying to impose it upon us as reality, right? What do you think it is? Do you feel that we should be getting angry enough about it and we're not doing that? About the fact that, you know, we're not tired of saying, of being called animals, being pushed aside, being stepped over, having things cut that are real fundamental quality of life situations that we need. We spoke about this in the gentrification segment where we got all these people who for years, places like the Bronx, New York, okay, the Bronx, New York, been the most horribly reputed borough in New York City. Okay, for having rats and dilapidated areas and, you know, places that all run down. These people have complained to housing projects, to the councilmen, every place. And finally, when they decide they want to do something about it, it's to uproot those people who have occupied that space, dealing with all those bad repairs. Why aren't we getting angry enough about it to say, what the hell are you doing that we're not taking it anymore?
Well, see, we have looked at the polls. I'm sorry, by the way. Oh, okay. Hello?
Yeah,
All right, Professor,
okay.
You have the mic first.
Okay. You know, and you know, it's funny because I think there's a lot of analogies that was used in that movie 12 Years a Slave. And like I said, I got through the first half hour, I guess the first 20 minutes of it. And you know when he caught the brother and he was trying to say that he was a free man from up north from Rochester, New York, and they beat him into submission until he got to the point where he said I'm from Georgia, where they told him he was from. You know, they beat him into submission, and when you think historically, that's what's happening to our people. I mean, we were just talking about how the brothers are working 2-3 jobs. You work 40 to 60 hours a week. You're too tired to fight. And you work, if you can't even get that job, you don't even have a drive. Now, yes. We got drugs thrown in our communities. What's the drug of choice? It's either alcohol or weed. So you got all those depressions. And then you find out historically how that was used to quell any fight. And the community, you know, it all starts to add up. Now, where we should be at right now is saying, listen, brothers and sisters, put down the blunt, put down the drink, and let's have a sober mind so that we can talk about how we can get out of this predicament. You know, you used a very important word, Katie, when you were talking about the gentrification of the Bronx. You used the word they. So when they finally came in, they took care of them. They're not concerned about taking care of us. So we have to be the ones concerned about taking care of us. They have the privilege. So until we can muscle up and form a united front and manifest some privilege of our own through group economics principles, buying from ourselves and building and fueling our communities to the point where we can start owning enough lots of land to where we can say, nah, you're not coming into our community. We'll buy that up so that you can't purchase it. You know, when we can start saying things of that nature, we can start building back up. Now, you want to talk about the negative stereotypes. The negative stereotypes are there because of the power of the media. Now, the power of the media is so influential. I'll give you an example. There was a very, very influential TV show a few years ago on HBO called The Wire. Now, we can all recall The Wire out of Baltimore, Maryland, which, you know, I've been to Baltimore a few times, and it is really like that. So when you watch that show, there was a season when the show focused on the youth. And when the show focused on the youth, all of the youth started wearing, all of the corner boys started wearing white T-shirts. So that spring and that summer, you go outside and you see children who, you know, were regular children, you know, they never came off as street guys or thugs or anything of that nature. You see them all huddled up wearing white shirts walking down the street. Like that was their street credibility. Like their street credibility was tied to that white T-shirt because of what they saw on The Wire. You know, and if you look at how the media influences us, you know, think about it like this. The Super Bowl makes like what? Almost $1 trillion in commercials. Why would people pay that much money for advertising if advertising didn't work?
Absolutely. And once again, let me go back to what I stated earlier. You brought up the Super Bowl commercials. Tell me now, the latest Super Bowl commercial that I saw was about this white guy that was trying to teach one of the players like a new dance, and the guy was like, well, is it going to catch on? What kind of music did they have? What kind of dancing did they have? It damn sure wasn't a square dance, and it wasn't a line dance.
Well, you know, it's always our things, and when you look at it from a hindsight, and you have to look outside the box at what's going on. I gave an example at the lecture about how the white middle class has taken Dr. Claude Anderson's Powernomics exercise, and they're using it to rebuild their communities. So you have the group economics principles going on in small towns and suburban areas where they won't allow Walmarts, Kmarts, or supermarket chains into their communities. Everything is locally owned. And they have that. And when they show that American Express actually has a commercial where they show this. And not only that, they have symposiums too. So they also have little workshops and webinars for people, and is really well kept and hidden away from us. But what they have is they show commercials where there are no black owners in these commercials. They have one brother getting his hair cut, and like I said before, when's the last time you seen a white guy cutting a brother's head? So you have a brother getting his hair cut in the barbershop. You have a brother who's a coach on the football field, but all the other store owners are white. So what are they trying to say? You know, and that message has resonated in the media. It's the same message that's resonated to our children. You go to school, you go to college, you get a good job, you get a good education, at least to a good job. We never tell our children to go out there and own the business. We never tell our children to go out there and be entrepreneurs. We never tell them to expand on their creativity and come up with a new invention, the next new big thing. We never do that because we fed into that whole school. And like Deacon Zetti said earlier, you know, the whole line of thought about individualism, you know, we have a, you know, this is still syndicated, right? So I can use whatever language I need. We have a F that N-word mentality towards how we are programmed right now. And we have to understand that came from hundreds of years of social conditioning. Yeah. Social conditioning is so powerful that the school of psychology was created to exert social conditioning on the masses. So social conditioning has us thinking like this, where we can't trust each other, where we're out there giving out goods and brothers out there, and the brothers are looking at us with a slanted eye, and they go across the street to the white man handing them a good, you know, and with open arms like, yes, this is what I was waiting for, and we're offering a better product. You see what I'm saying? So we have to, you know, get to that point where we overcome the social conditioning, and that only comes through unlearning what we've had. And, you know, I don't want to say this to sound like I'm pessimistic about our generation, but let's face it, if you're 35, 40 and up, you're pretty much set in your ways. So I like to focus on the youth. You know, Brother Ishmael, he focuses on the youth, and you know, he has a full-time job, dance family, and he still takes time out to work in the community, a community that everybody else is trying to abandon.
Right.
You know,
and
so
you know what though,
yeah.
Professor Jones, you said two things. You said one about our social conditioning based on, you know, previous history, of course. And my father, I explained once before, and was a victim of being slapped by a white man in segregation era. And I spoke about how my grandfather, rest his soul, had tears in his eyes at 84 years old when he was telling the story about how this 4-year-old son got backhanded, and when he went to go defend, as any parent would, especially a man parent, this white man put a gun in his face and said, "I dare you to do something about it, nigga." So that's one thing. Now my father still believes he's like caught in a I don't know how to call it, like he's swinging on both ends of the fence, because he can't stand that part of racism and what he grew up with, yet he still walks around and used to talk everything he could against anything that was black. My sisters and I and brothers and I, we all range in different complexions because our mom is Spanish and he's African American. Now, any one of my brothers and sisters that had, you know, quote, end quote, black features, he used to make jokes about it, not meaning anything by it. He thought it was just in fun. But it developed complexes for my siblings. My brother had a big nose. The other one had big lips. Oh, you black as the ace of spades. Oh, you this. All of these silly things that while it's not, while he's hating where it comes from, he's taught us that we need to do things different from who we are. Now, myself, I'm light-skinned. I have, you know, pretty good hair. I should say straight hair. Let me say this again. Not good hair, straight hair, because I hate that crap when they say that. My features are a little smaller in the whole nine. So, you know, in the ignorant world, I would be one of the people that would be a little more acceptable. Meanwhile, I grew up having been a victim of rape and incest, molestation, having been cheated on, been beaten, doing the whole nine. And guess what? I didn't find anything beautiful about it. So that's one. And the other thing I wanted to point out was the 35, 40s, and 50-year-olds. Listen, enough of you using what you came from. You know what you didn't like about it. Well, now is your chance to not pass it on to your child. And that is what I'm talking about when I say that you have to use what's in your space, what you can control. Okay?
Absolutely.
We can control the right to say, when my father picked up a rock and beat the hell out of me, I agree with the spanking, don't agree with the choice of weapons. Why do we have to pick up a rock to bash our kid on the head? I don't think so. Now, do I believe in whipping a behind if I have to, if it gets to that point? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not taking that away, because you know what? Timeouts don't apply to all situations. I spoke to somebody in one of the pre-broadcast responses that was like, "I don't spank my child. I'll give a look." Well, some of your children might respond to that, and what happens to the one that doesn't? What happens to that's what they do know? You understand? If your one-year-old baby has a pair of scissors and is about to head into an outlet, I can guarantee you saying, "No, no, honey, time out," is not going to stop them from getting shot.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's certain things where you have to start using your God-given senses, your creativity, especially as an African-American, because we are resourceful. How is it that we can manage to unify when there's a black politician taking a high position? And not understand that those very politicians who don't know a damn thing about your neighborhood will know who the hell you are come September primaries and will email you personally as if you guys have been on their mind the whole year.
Absolutely. And people need to be more like Katie, first and foremost, because everybody's scared. And I think the question was, why are we not mad enough? What is going on? Why aren't we taking a stand? And especially to the generation that was in question, 35 and up, especially, though I'm not even a part of that generation, but why are we scared to pass down the torch? Up until now, yes, think about this. Think about how much progress we have made. Nothing but unity could have done. Nothing but unity could have done so. So it hasn't been that long that we've been so disunified, so decrepit, so degraded, and it's been so readily seen on the TV screen.
It's only been a few years it's been going on. Up until that point, we've been unified. We done came up out of slavery. We done established black business. We done re-educated. We done came bounced back from 400 years of degradation and then more degradation on top of that more. And to this day, violence, we still the moral fabric of this society. This society will not get any better unless we say so, and that's how it has been and how it's always going to be.
And we have the power to unify in the right way. We have the power to get angry in the right way because guess what? We see it on Facebook.
Right.
In our very groups, we see it. We see them knowing enough to be angry about something. The problem is that anger has to go to the right channels. Facebook is not City Hall. Facebook
right.
is not your game counselman. Facebook is nobody in your 1,000 friends is going to get the hell up from Toledo, Ohio, or Austin, Texas, to go to your damn house in Philadelphia and tell your councilman that the street light on the corner is allowing criminals to rape a girl when she comes home from a night school. Okay, that's not going to make a difference. Toledo, Ohio,
correct.
And Austin, Texas is not going to New York City to sit there and say, why is it that there's the food stamps are being cut?
How do we reach those people, though? My thing is, how do you reach those people? Because I agree with everything that was said, you know. But when you look at things, people are so, like, a lot of black folk think they arrived, or think we've arrived. You know, once Brother Obama got in the office, like, a lot of people, you know, they whatever rally flags or boxing gloves they had, they put them down. And they put them down for good. People are so stuck on the reality TV foolishness. I mean, it's just so much stuff that's distracting. If you go to the local teachers' conference, you go to the city hall meetings, it's nobody there. They're all on Facebook posting about some foolishness.
Right.
So my thing is, how do we reach them? That's why my when you talk about the people in our age group, I'm 40, you know, and a lot of my peers, I keep using the word zombies. They are zombies. That's why I focus on the youth. Like, the youth are the ones that's impressionable that I try to help steer them in a different direction because it's a lot of broken spirits of people in my age bracket. And people just conditioned to say, man, it's going to be what it's going to be or it is what it is and that type of foolishness. Like, people are so – like, you could turn on, I don't know, whatever night, Scandal. You got Scandal. All of these shows, Scandal's the – what's that? Housewives, the hip hop thing, the hip hop. Like, yo, we are stuck, and those people that's stuck, we gotta focus on their children. As sad as it might sound, like, yeah, they need to raise who they that's in their house. They not gonna raise them, or no, I won't say they. I don't want to just throw you with a paint a broad brush, but there's a lot of kids that's gonna miss out on getting the proper nurturing because their mothers and their fathers are stuck. A lot of the youth that I deal with. When they find, they're like, oh, Mr. Ishmael, you know my mom. My mom said she went to school with you. And they'll tell me, oh, you know my dad. And they'll say their dad or their mom. And I'm like, wow, that's this such and such son or this such and such daughter. So I see why you're going through what you're going through. Because I see your mom posting on Facebook. Like, she's real trifling. Or your father is just real disrespectful. Like, this is supposed to raise you and you know what I mean, put you in a better place, in a better position. But it's not going to happen. They're not giving you the proper guidance. So it's really on us. It's really on us.
I have to cut you short because we're down to our last 6 minutes. So I do have an answer for that question that you asked about how do we reach them. The same way that just not long ago in this very segment, we spoke about how to shut down and be angry enough with the bigwigs, which, like you said, the Jewish people boycotted Mel Gibson. Because guess what? The only language they understand is money. Well, maybe we should start figuring out a way how to take something political that affects our community in a way that we understand it on a straight-up platform and figure out how eventually it'll trickle down to them being affected with buying the Jordans or buying the iPhones. How is it if you don't pay attention to that, it can go down to just that low of a level? Okay, maybe that's it. Maybe we, the ones that are up here making the hustle and shaking our legs and not our heads, maybe we need to figure out how we can talk down to that level because that's one of the things I used to do as a salesperson. to see that I used to get the customers that looked dirty to people on the street that they would walk over and not even approach and make them a customer. So guess what? Maybe we need to figure out how it is that we can touch what they readily identify on a daily basis and figure out how we can connect and integrate the importance of the higher level political stuff and social issues to what they can equate to going to the mall. Maybe that's it, because enough already with this garbage. You weren't into slavery, yet you want to use the struggle to have excuses, to give these people the worst of us to capitalize on and sensationalize and commercialize, make money from it and glamorize it their way. But yet we're sitting here getting torn the hell apart and pretty much gutted and left for nothing. Enough. Mm. I have children growing up, and quite a few of them. I've got three that are parents themselves. So enough. Now maybe we need to start letting them know how not paying attention to the city council election is going to eventually affect the way you can buy Jordans, or you could buy that iPhone or that Galaxy S. Maybe that's what we have to do, if that's what it takes. And this is not to degrade anyone. And like I said, for all of you people back there sucking your teeth and shaking your heads, if the shoes don't apply, don't pick the damn shoes up. That's all I'm going to tell you. Okay? If they don't fit you, that means they're not your pair to walk in. That means it's not you that we're speaking about. And kudos to you. Maybe you can get up and go teach other people how it is you do what you do.
No, Katie, you hit on so many different levels there. And, you know, your passion reminds me of Ishmael's passion. It reminds me of my passion. And it reminds me of the passion of this panel. I hear it in Zeddy's voice. I hear it and the brother, I'm sorry, brother, it was a couple other brothers, it was like two other brothers on the line. And, brother, I'm trying to buy, I'm trying to buy a book. CeeLo, right?
Stay low.
Okay, baby. So, you know, and I was trying to buy the book, so you're going to have to repost it, brother, so we can get to that website. But the whole thing is, we can now start identifying solutions. Through planning, we can start identifying solutions. And just like when we were out at Chester, we said something like, you know, every journey starts with the first step, and we're walking it. So now we're out there taking that step, and we're going to be the ones changing minds. I mean, like, you know, some of the people that it was hard to reach before, like that brother that was working with us all day, he said, man, you guys changed my life. So I've never seen brothers working together like this to do things, and they didn't get anything out of it. You know, and I'm like, yo, brother, we got something out of it. You know what I'm saying? We're all walking around here on cloud nine right now. You know, you don't know how it feels. And so we're definitely proud of what we're doing, but we know that it's just, you know, we didn't climb the mountaintop. We're right now at the base of the mountain, and we're looking at the mountain right now, and we're preparing to climb this mountain. And so we're in our preparation stages, and we do have events coming up, and I talked to the brothers over there, Black and Nobel. They are more than happy to assist, because they are also community-centered here in North Philadelphia. So, you know, and we want to reach out. There are other places, the community center that we worked at Chester, that sister, what's that sister's name again, Ish?
Twyla Simpkins.
Sister Simpkins, she wants to do things out there to bring her community back up. I mean, we have people that are ready, and like I said before, we have the warriors, we have the youth, and if we could just get their ear, if we could just meet them where they are and bring them along, then this struggle will be a lot easier, because they'll be the ones to take us to the next place we need to go to in this revolution.
Thank you, Dev. Thank you very much. I do have to end the show out, guys. I want to thank every single one of you for honoring me with your presence. Like I said, on Christmas Eve, those of you that are listening, I want all of you to try to spread the meaning of Christmas more than the commercialism of it. I want you to have a safe and happy and prosperous holiday. I want to thank every one of you that have brought us up now to 16,797 people. I don't know where you're coming from, but thank you all very much. Thank you to all of you that have been reaching out to me, letting me know how much this show has affected you in a positive way. We are trying to keep it up. Thank you once again Hakeem, I know that you are dropped off, but thank you. Thank you to More Rights LLC for their sponsorship contributions. Any of you that are interested, you can reach out to me on Facebook, or you can reach out to me on the Edge Show at Outlook.com to get, you know, written details of what the sponsorship packages offer and how cheap they are, because they're cheap. You can be an individual or a business. It doesn't matter. We can tell you exactly how it is. If you're an individual,
yes,
your name gets mentioned. If you're a business, your products get promoted, either way you look at it. So either way, and you'll be contributing to a mission to help us re-empower our community, and especially our youth. So until Thursday night, everybody, because I have to work the Knicks game tomorrow, and it's Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry, Merry Christmas, and have a great one. And, guys, thank you so much for your input, your intelligence, your passion. Deacon, I can't thank you enough. Ishmael, please keep doing what you're doing, because if you reach three people, you're reaching people. And to you, Professor, hats off at all times. Stalo, you too. Your passion is through the roof, dude. We all need to stay connected after the show, and I have a little idea myself. So after the show, you guys, I'm going to send you a group message, and I'm going to let you know what it is. So just listen out, okay? So until tomorrow night, everybody, be blessed, be a blessing, make a difference, and have a happy holiday.
Yeah.
Happy holidays, everyone.
All right.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.